With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey, yo, Fro Wrestling Podcast listeners, help us out and click subscribe to show your support. And while you're at it, if you are a member of the Facebook community, shoot over to Wrestler Unstoppable. If you're sick and tired of dropping $60 to $100 every time you purchase a wrestling video game, don't do it any longer. Play Wrestler Unstoppable on Facebook, totally free. Create your own character, customize them, get involved in storylines, sign contracts, negotiate, join corporations, win championships, headline pay-per-views. Everything you can think of in the world of professional wrestling, you can do with Wrestler Unstoppable. Check that out today. And while you're at it, shoot over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/Fro Wrestling Podcast if you want to become a member of our Fro Wrestling Podcast family. Thank you, as always, to our buddy Harold in St. Louis, our number one Patreon member for this month. Thank you, everybody, and welcome to this live episode of the Fro Wrestling Podcast. I've had some people sending me messages all week about would I be addressing the passing of Bobby the Brain Heenan, and yes, I will. This episode, in a way, is kind of a tribute to Bobby Heenan and to another superstar who passed away this past week, Otto Wanz, who I will discuss both of them a little later in the show. We'll go through all the news and rumors of the day and also touch on the careers of these two amazing and influential people in the world of professional wrestling. As we go through the show, feel free to call into our Pro Wrestling Sound Off line at 267-642-1160, and you can give us your questions, your comments, concerns, anything you'd like to discuss. We're open to that tonight if you happen to be on live with us while we're on the air. And if, for those who are new to the podcast, if you want to check out what it is we're going to discuss on any podcast episode, all the notes of what we're going to cover are on our main website at www.frowrestling.com. If you go there now, you can actually see all the topics we'll discuss. And you can prepare any questions or thoughts or anything you want to share with us on that Fro Wrestling Sound Off line a little bit ahead of time. So I want to get right into the news and rumors and everything that's been going on. It's actually been a relatively complicated week, not just, you know, the more emotional things that we have to discuss, but just in wrestling action in and of itself. We are getting ready for No Mercy. That is this Sunday, WWE's pay-per-view. It's a Raw-branded pay-per-view, but there's a lot of other things going on. First off, for me personally, as a child, I know I live in Pennsylvania near Philadelphia, and I know that that used to be WWF territory when I was a kid, but I always found the NWA and WCW to be every bit as good a quality, if not better, in-ring action all throughout my youth. And one of the things that I used to look forward to every year was Starrcade. And Starrcade was essentially WCW or the NWA's equivalent to WrestleMania. Yes, there were other pay-per-views, and some of them were extraordinarily successful, Great American Bash and whatnot, but Starrcade really was their show. It was the first major big event show of its kind. Started in 1983 and ran all the way through WCW's closing, and it has been gone for quite some time now. So WWE has decided on November 25th this year that they will be bringing back Starrcade. And they have announced some of the matches on the card. And there's, you know, it reads like another WWE pay-per-view, which I'm okay with. There are going to be some special appearances. I've heard word that the Rock and Roll Express and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat will be at the show. And that there are some cross... Mostly, it's predominantly a SmackDown show, but the Hardy Boys will be there. There's some conversation about the Hardys taking on the Rock and Roll Express. And what is weird for me is 1 year ago, around that time, will be when the Final Deletion episode on Impact would have aired, which had the Rock and Roll Express face the Hardys at the Hardy Compound. So it'll be kind of interesting to see if they do that. But that is not the only possibility at that show. By the way, the rest of the card is really fantastic. Two cage matches, both a women's and a men's cage match. Jinder Mahal will be in a cage match, as well as Charlotte and Natalya. Yeah, Jinder Mahal going against Shinsuke Nakamura. But more importantly for me, on the card, at least my opinion, is that it is the way they have given away what Dolph Ziggler's first big program is going to be. And that is, Dolph Ziggler will be facing Bobby Roode at Starrcade. So, for those who obviously have been paying attention to the booking of Dolph Ziggler lately, he's been doing this thing where he's coming out to other people's entrance music. This past week, he did the same thing again. I'll cover this now so we don't have to worry about it when I talk about some things from SmackDown. But coming out this week to Triple H's music, to Shawn Michaels' music, and then to DX's music. Following up on the last 2 weeks where we've seen everything from Bayley to the Macho Man Randy Savage to the Ultimate Warrior. Obviously, there's still... evolving this character. I think it's an interesting one. The fans are waiting to see where it goes. Here's my concern, though. I don't want to see Dolph Ziggler leave WWE. It sounds like that may be in his plan, but I'm hoping that doesn't happen because I actually like this new character. I feel like it is an injection of some interest into Dolph Ziggler we haven't had in a little while. And so at the November 25th Starrcade, he will take on Bobby Roode. I suspect that in the coming weeks, he will steal Bobby Roode's entrance, which will lead to that feud, which I'm fine with. I think the two of them would put on a fantastic match, and I'm really looking forward to that. But on the topic of Starrcade, one of the, to me, the most exciting potential happening has nothing to do with the WWE talent. And that is that Cody Rhodes, son of the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, current Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, had made a reference to WWE bringing back Starrcade. Giving him a hard time that it was his father's idea and that no Rhodes was booked on the show. And he said, at least put Goldie on the show, meaning his brother, Dustin Rhodes, Goldust. And the interesting thing is that he actually got a response from Michael P.S. Hayes, who, as many people know, is heavily involved in the creative direction and booking of the SmackDown brand. And he made it real clear. How about you come to the show? Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes could take on the Hardys. You would see the brothers versus the brothers, a match that we really have never seen. It would be very interesting, I think, to the fans. And more importantly, with Cody Rhodes being the Ring of Honor World Champion, but not actually being under long-term contract to Ring of Honor, I think this would be a great opportunity for WWE to show some, I almost want to say like an ambassadorship, like a handshake deal with Ring of Honor to bring their world champion to a WWE show and showcase the heck out of him. And I would go so far as to say, obviously Dustin Rhodes would pick up the loss, but do not have Cody take the loss. I think it would be a great way for them to try to mend some bridges with Cody Rhodes and to offer that as a possibility in the future for him to come back to the brand. In addition, not having competition is actually a bad thing in the pro wrestling world. You need competition so that you can force the creative envelope to get more creative, to come up with new ideas, and we haven't had that since WCW, and fostering the Ring of Honor brand would only do that, especially since WWE has really been using Ring of Honor as a breeding ground for their new talent. So I'll be very curious to see what banter we see back and forth between Cody, Michael Hayes, WWE, and the Rhodes family ahead of this big show, Starrcade, November 25th. Moving into some of the happenings this week, and I'll get back to the other news a little later, but Raw actually was, for me, a very big disappointment. First off, they are pushing Jason Jordan in a great way. You have him put on a classic, wonderful wrestling match with John Cena. You have him put on another technical masterpiece with Roman Reigns. You have him embroiled in this feud with The Miz, sorta, kinda, where he keeps suplexing the heck out of everybody every time he gets in the ring with The Miztourage. These events, in a normal situation, would lead to a guy really getting over with the fans. Here's the problem. Jason Jordan, no matter what he does, is never going to be popular. He's never going to push merchandise. He's never going to be a main star. He's never going to be an attraction until they end the Kurt Angle illegitimate father storyline. It is so overscripted, so ridiculous, that people are actually turned off by it. They don't want that. Look, I understand that wrestling is a choreographed and predetermined activity. I get that. But the fans don't want to be treated like they're, you know, infantile. We got smart people who tune into WWE programming. So by running this angle in the first place was a horrible idea. Now it clearly hasn't worked. So get rid of it. Do something else. Do something of more substance. On Raw also, we saw really the muddling of the Raw Women's Championship picture ahead of No Mercy. So we were heading into the pay-per-view, Sasha Banks versus Alexa Bliss versus Emma versus Nia Jax in a fatal four-way for the Women's Championship. Now this week, Alexa Bliss takes on Nia Jax in a match. Sasha Banks is at ringside. Everything's breaking loose. And here comes Bayley returning to the show. Which, the interesting thing is Emma was not even there. She was spending some extra time with her family down in Australia after WWE ran some shows down there. And so Bayley comes out, and there's like this three-woman spear on Nia Jax. I don't know how Alexa Bliss is being typecast as a babyface now. She's really not. I actually thought they missed the boat, because I thought if Alexa Bliss would have gotten out of the ring, they were doing this thing where Sasha Banks and Bayley were really celebrating, and, you know, Sasha picks up the women's championship belt and Bayley hands it to her or whatever. It was a perfect time for Bayley to turn on Sasha. I'm going to keep hitting that point every time we talk Bayley and Sasha, because it's the only way you have any chance of ever revitalizing Bayley's career. Because right now, people just aren't reacting to her. She's almost as bad as Jason Jordan. She was in her hometown, her big return, and she got nothing. People couldn't care less. They've beaten the heck out of her character for the last 3 or 4 months. She doesn't mean anything anymore. You have to make her relevant. And the only way you're going to do that is to flip her heel and have her turn on Sasha Banks. That's what they need to do. You can't even do the opposite. You can't have Sasha Banks go heel and flip on Bayley, because at this point, people already have seen Sasha Banks as a heel. They kind of expect that to happen at some point. Bayley, they still don't believe is going to happen. You have to go that route if you want to have any chance to bring Bayley back to the popularity she had when she first debuted on the Raw brand. I'm going to talk about Enzo a little bit. They had this segment this week on Raw where he came out and he got totally destroyed and decimated by Braun Strowman. And I'm fine with the angle. I really am. I think it adds some another layer to his cruiserweight opportunity at No Mercy. My issue is that when Braun Strowman is obliterating Enzo Amore, the fan reaction is curious to me. I don't know if fans are cheering for Braun because they hate Enzo, because clearly they don't, because every time he walks out, they go crazy and they pop to everything he says to them. Or are they so into Braun that it doesn't matter who he destroys, they're going to cheer? I would hope it's the latter of the two. If that's the case, then Braun Strowman is more over than probably anybody in the company right now, except maybe AJ Styles. And I would actually give a nod probably to Braun Strowman, because AJ Styles does not get the same chance that Braun gets. So I hope WWE is listening loud and clear to what's really going on with their fan base, because Braun Strowman is establishing himself as a force to be reckoned with, and it is really exciting right now. It's a great time to be a WWE fan. I can't wait to see the World Championship match, or the Universal Championship match, at No Mercy. Moving on, Dustin Rhodes. So we spoke about him earlier with Starrcade on Raw, doing this whole angle where he has no face paint on after, a week ago when Bray Wyatt wiped it off, and he wanted to go to the ring and face him as a man and all this other stuff. What I found bizarre is that over the course of the last couple years, Bray Wyatt has been pretty much fed to every major star that they needed to get over, and he's been able to take a pinfall, somehow not completely destroy his character, but also not make himself look like the toughest, most reliable heel either. which I have a problem with. And in this situation, Dustin Rhodes is granted his request. He comes out to face Bray Wyatt, and then he obliterates Bray Wyatt. He's throwing him all over the outside of the ring and slamming him on steps and every other thing in the world. And it turns out that he climbs into the ring and he runs right into his sister Abigail, and that's the end of the match. It made Bray Wyatt look so weak. And more importantly, and I've heard this on the Dave Meltzer's radio show, and I can't agree more, that Dustin Rhodes without paint, I actually think it was his co-host that said it, that Dustin Rhodes without paint, he just looked old. That doesn't make him a horrible wrestler. I think when I was listening to the Wrestling Observer podcast, that they kind of alluded to him that his appearance had like this major effect. Dustin Rhodes, I don't care how old he is, he could still go. He can go really long. He's very good in the ring. A guy who probably was passed over. He should have been a world champion at some point. But at this stage of his career, obviously they don't want to invest that kind of money in him. But then they put him in this situation where he's literally beating the tar out of Bray Wyatt. And I find it curious that they did the whole Dustin Rhodes thing. So I'm going to keep my eye on that in the next couple weeks, especially ahead of Starrcade. Perhaps we do get to see a Dustin Rhodes appearance, which would be very, for lack of better terms, very spiritual for watching the Starrcade pay-per-view or house show or whatever they're going to call it. I want to talk a little bit about Raw's tag team division because, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm stressed. I'm actually stressed out with their tag team division. And here's why. If you look at SmackDown, it's the Usos versus the New Day, and anybody else is just garbage. And I don't care. I enjoy watching it. The Fashion Police, in my opinion, should be in a more prime position, but they're doing their Fashion File thing. Harper and Rowan are off TV. Primo and Epico are off TV. There's really not too many people from the face. There's the Hype Bros that wrestled the New Day this week and lost. And then you've got, you know, garbage tag team. Like, you just don't have a lot of tag teams. And what's frustrating is I'm more interested in SmackDown's tag team division, and there's really only two teams. Now you flip it and you go over to Raw. You've got Ambrose and Rollins. You've got Cesaro and Sheamus. You've got the Club. You've got the Hardys. You've got, if you have to, you have Heath Slater and Rhino. But the reality is, just taking the top four tag teams, you have four teams that are legitimate stud tag teams. And I couldn't care less about the tag team division. This week, you have three of those four teams in the ring at the same time. You had Ambrose and Rollins. You had Cesaro and Sheamus. You had the Club, Gallows and Anderson. And it was boring. I feel like the Raw creative team has not been able to come up with anything that resembles a good storyline for tag team wrestling in years. It hasn't been years, but it feels like it's years. You know, the New Day was a great thing on Raw. You know, before that, I really don't know what the best thing was. The Shield? What was it before that? Demolition? I mean, not quite, but you know, you get my point. They're not developing a tag team division. And for years, the conversation has been that Stephanie doesn't like tag team wrestling. She's not behind it and stuff like that. But they really need to take a look at that. I will say that at one of the SmackDown house shows, the one in Hawaii where Kofi Kingston actually hurt his ankle a little bit, they did the pairing of Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin, which I thought was a fantastic pairing. I actually think they should run with that. It would help both of their careers a little bit, but I digress. The Raw tag team division, absolutely horrible. Despite the fact that it's got significantly more talent, they're not doing anything with the talent. They're not getting creative with the matches at all. You look at SmackDown, they literally, you could call the Ascension, the Fashion Police, all those teams, Primo, Epico, all those stuff. You can talk about how many teams they have, but everybody who tunes into that show knows there's exactly two teams that have any chance of ever wearing that gold. That's the Usos and the New Day. And that makes it exciting when they're smart enough to create the street fight, to put them in Hell in a Cell, to put them in rap battles, and do these things that are different than just a standard traditional wrestling match that we've seen every week for the last month and a half. It would be really nice for Raw's creative team to start getting on board with the SmackDown team, because the SmackDown team obviously knows how to market better when they have much more limited resources and do a significantly better job. Finally, on the Raw topics of conversation, the six-pack challenge, what an incredibly horrible go-home episode main event. You've got no John Cena on the card. You've got no Brock Lesnar on the card. Now, you've got Brock in a pre-recorded segment where he and Braun Strowman are jaw-jabbing. That's not the same. That doesn't pop the crowd. John Cena, I understand he's flying back from the overseas tour. I get it. But this is a go-home episode, and you knew that months in advance. If it's that situation, don't have him wrestle a house show in Osaka, Japan, or wherever, the night before Raw. You bring him home a day early and don't have him on that last show, because you need him here to send this pay-per-view into overdrive right before the show kicks off. Instead, we get this six-pack challenge. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, on the topic of Cena and Roman Reigns did a great job with his little tidbit and speaking endeavor on Raw. We'll get to that in a moment. But the six-pack challenge fell flat. The Miz wasn't even in the match. I don't remember the last time The Miz actually wrestled a match. Jason Jordan looked great, but he has no fan support whatsoever. He ends up winning the match. He'll face The Miz. I don't know why. I understand the push. He's incredible in the ring. But it doesn't matter if he's incredible if no one's going to buy his merchandise. No one's going to get behind him. Even the kids don't care about him. And kids care about everybody. They can't care less about him. So my personal opinion, this is a huge issue. Because they have the opportunity for a budgeting star, and they're wasting it because of this ridiculous, ludicrous Kurt Angle angle. That felt weird to say. So I hope they end that sooner than later. Before I get to the SmackDown conversation, I want to talk about a few other tidbits in the world of professional wrestling. Conan recently was on one of the podcasts. Gosh, I can't remember. I saw it on E-Wrestling News, but he was talking about his potential heat with Vince McMahon, and he made a statement referencing back when he played the character of Max Moon. For those who don't remember who Max Moon was, look him up on YouTube. He was this blue and black. He kind of looked like a Power Ranger robot-looking thing. He'd walk to the ring and shoot these blazing fireballs and all this insanity. And it was a really cool character, but the problem was there was a lot of equipment that went along with the character, the outfit and everything else. Conan was living in Mexico and really launching his career into mass media of Mexico, starring on soap operas and TV shows, in the movies, and he was really starting to make a name for himself. Now, I will be first to admit, Conan did the wrong thing. He ended up deciding that he didn't need to be in WWE to be a star and to make money, and he just stopped showing up to work. The gimmick for Max Moon ended up passing on to a guy by the name of Paul Diamond. For those who remember the Orient Express, he teamed with Pat Tanaka. He was a part of Bad Company over in the AWA when they were the AWA World Tag Team Champions. He ended up taking on the Max Moon character, and WWE was apparently furious that Conan just stopped showing up to work. But Conan made sure to point out that whenever he goes to a WWE show, there are plenty of stories out there where WWE will not let former talents or competing shows talents or things like that backstage. And Conan has never had trouble. He can go visit people, go to the locker room, do all these things. So obviously, if they had too much heat, they wouldn't let him do that. And he made it very clear that Vince McMahon himself is very cordial with him whenever he comes to a show. So I don't know if there actually is any heat or if this is just more internet fodder for people to debate and discuss. Speaking of WWE and their fan base, though, WWE actually sent out a survey this week to the people who were on the WWE mailing list, and there was a ton of questions that were really interesting on this survey. They talked about, would you be interested in seeing Global Force Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, or TNA Wrestling? They listed all three. On the network, would you like to see Ring of Honor? Would you like to see other promotions like ICW and Progress, WXW, and things like that? They ask questions about more original programming, more wrestler roasts and the Southpaw regional wrestling, and just a variety of choices for things that fans actually want to see. For me personally, though, seeing them mention Global Force Wrestling and Ring of Honor on there was very exciting, because I firmly believe that they are looking to try to make a partnership with somebody. Now, I think the most likely partner is going to be ICW, Progress Wrestling, Rev Pro, something of that nature. And now with the word coming out that Lucha Underground may be going under, I fully expect Vince to put the full court press on the owners of the El Rey Network and AAA to sell that video library. I don't think they will. I think it'll go to AAA, who's the parent company, and they'll probably keep it for themselves. But I do think at some point he ought to look at New Japan Pro Wrestling and AAA and CMLL and see about putting their programming on the network. Let's face it, New Japan has their own network, but it doesn't get a lot of American people subscribing because, one, the page is really hard to navigate unless you speak Japanese, and two, just the logistics of the WWE network interfacing with something else is huge. I think WWE would want to license certain shows and whatnot and really be able to distribute the heck out of it. The only concern being, do they really want to build someone who's planning on being a direct competitor? And I think the answer is actually yes. I think if you have good product, you bring subscribers to your network. And at the end of the day, that's what WWE is trying to do, is bring people to the network. They don't care if it's somebody else's product. As long as they still feel like they have the best product, they don't care what else is out there, as long as it's making them money. So it'll be curious to see if this survey does anything. They've done these before. It's never resulted in anything, so we'll have to wait and see. On the SmackDown front, I actually love what they're doing with Aiden English. He has a match where he gets obliterated by Randy Orton, but then he's the key factor in Randy Orton losing an immediate follow-up match to Rusev. I don't know what to make of Aiden English, but he looked great in his match with Randy Orton. He looked like he could really work in the ring with some of the bigger, more established stars, and I think WWE needs to look at him and be like, what can we do with this guy? Because he's clearly incredibly talented, and he's just being wasted, you know, a lot like a lot of other wrestlers we're going to talk about throughout this episode. Rusev is another one. I feel like Rusev is being wasted as well. I don't know what they're doing. Rusev beats Randy Orton. He gets one kick to the face and a pin. And somehow he thinks he's going to go home a conquering hero in Bulgaria. It's a ludicrous angle. I hate it. It makes Rusev look stupid, and I don't like that at all. But I guess that's where we're going. Hopefully we'll see a blow-off match for this Randy Orton feud sooner than later, because I don't like their chemistry at all. And I really think Randy Orton needs to be, I don't want to say repackaged, but he needs to be put in a very different position, because he feels stale, and he shouldn't. He's still young enough. He should feel relatively, I don't want to say early career, but he should feel like he's still in the middle of his career. Instead, it feels like he's an aging veteran who needs to retire, and the dude's only like mid to late 30s. Give the guy a break. But Shane McMahon, I do want to address this. Shane McMahon coming out and doing his promo about Kevin Owens after last week's attack on Vince McMahon. What a ridiculous, overscripted bunch of nonsense. Shane is not an actor. Please stop making him act like one. He didn't sound authentic. He didn't sound real. It didn't sound like he was actually angry. It sounded like he was almost reading a promo card from like the inside of his hand, like The Rock a few years ago. It was horrible. And same thing with Kevin Owens when they do his video package later in the show. Again, it's so overscripted. I understand needing to script certain things, but God, let the...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
These guys just talk. They are human beings. They have a voice. Let them speak. They're not going to bury your product. They're going to sound better when they're authentic. This Shane McMahon interview was god-awful. Absolutely terrible. One of the things that they did this week that I thought was fantastic is they get ready to have the United States Championship match with JJ Styles and Baron Corbin. And instead of that happening, you have Baron Corbin get attacked by Ty Dillinger, which was fantastic. Dillinger looked aggressive. He looked strong. He looked like somebody you'd really want to see. And this was like the best exposure he's had since debuting with the brand. And I thought, it's about time. Ty Dillinger is significantly better than what we've seen because they don't let him perform. The match with JJ Styles was fantastic. It was a great match. That's what he's capable of putting on. That's what we need to start seeing. Because as of right now, we haven't seen anything worth a darn of him since he came to the Blue Brand. It's time to push him. Speaking of teams that may be in line for another push, the Hype Bros. So we've been talking for a long time now about how there's been conversation of splitting up the Hype Bros. That may not be the case. Now, this is not something coming from another news agency or another website. I say this all the time. If people want to know where I get my sources, I get them from eWrestlingNews.com. I get them from WrestleZone.com, F4W.online.com, PWIOnline.com, like everywhere you can think of to get pro wrestling information. Wrestling Inc., whatever. Sports Gita. But for this is just my analysis of what's going on with the Hype Bros. I actually thought that the banter that the discussion they had in their little segment after losing to the New Day could set them up for a full team heel turn rather than splitting them up. What are you going to do with Zack Ryder? For real, I think he'd be a fantastic single star, but obviously WWE doesn't, or he wouldn't have been in the tag team to begin with. And what are you going to do with Mojo Rawley? The guy is as green as a gourd. He looks like Kevin Green back in WCW when he teamed with Mongo McMichael, when McMichael turned on Kevin Green and became a horseman. You know, it's terrible. And so this week, the way they addressed each other after the match and the way he was like, you know, if you want things to change, we got to do something drastic or whatever. It sounds to me like they may be planning to turn the tag team as a whole as into a heel tag team. And they should. Outside of the Usos, there's not one heel tag team that poses a threat to the New Day. None. I'm fully in favor of flipping the Hype Bros heel. I think it would be good for both of them. Give them some new fire and energy and stop playing by the rules and start being ruthless, aggression, and everything else. I think that would be a great idea for the Hype Bros. Moving on to the main event at SmackDown, Charlotte winning the Fatal 4-Way, winning the number one contendership, going on to face Natalya at Hell in a Cell. This was a decent match. Everybody got very physical. I enjoyed it. Even Lana outside the ring got physical a little bit. And Charlotte, you know, with all that she's been through recently, I love that they're putting her in the main event picture. But for those people who paid attention to the Starrcade announcement, we already knew Charlotte was the one in line to get the shot because Charlotte's facing Natalya at Starrcade. So naturally, she had to face her at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view because how do you foster that Starrcade show if there is no backstory? So it's just my opinion. Got a few other tidbits of news before we get to some of the more pressing topics. Paige. It looks like Paige is on the verge of making her return to WWE programming. Apparently, she has been fully medically cleared. She is at the WWE Performance Center. Today was her third day back at the Performance Center. She's been posting it to Twitter. She's thrilled to be back. And you gotta wonder what toll this is taking on her relationship with Alberto El Patron. But at this point, who cares? I think he's a hothead loser anyways. If she wants to get back in the WWE ring and she's working this hard to get back, bring her back. We need her as a female talent on the brand. Because that female division, really, like, what are we doing here? She'd be a great addition to either show. Fresh matches. Make her look strong because she's been gone for so long. She'd really give Charlotte a run for her money. She'd give Alexa Bliss a run for her money. She could be the scary one who takes on, you know, the Harley Quinn freak of Alexa Bliss. I would even love to see her wrestle a match with Nia Jax. I think it'd be great. The other thing some people have speculated is that if she makes her return, they may put her against Asuka and feed her to Asuka just to punish her. I think that's a bad idea. You don't want to kill a commodity you've invested a lot of money, time, and energy in. She is a fantastic talent. Congratulations to Paige. Good luck on the return to the ring. And Impact Wrestling. Some conversation about their branding. Like they were TNA. For those who don't know, originally, when they first started their company, it was TNA, NWA TNA, Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. And then it changed a little bit. They dropped the whole NWA part, and they just became TNA, Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. And then they tried to get away from the TNA part as much, and they just kind of focused on the Impact part. And it became just Impact Wrestling for a while, even though they still kept the TNA letters on their belts and everything else. And then when Anthem purchased them, it was, you know, Impact Wrestling, Anthem Impact Wrestling. And then you had the merger with Jeff Jarrett that was supposed to go through, and they were Global Force, GFW Impact Wrestling, and Global Force Wrestling. And now that Jeff Jarrett is out of the company, now they make their major announcement about Bound for Glory going to Ottawa and in Canada. And the thing is there's no mention of GFW, no Global Force Wrestling references at all. And they just made new championship belts with the GFW letters on all their belts. So unless they're going to make new belts and get rid of the GFW name altogether, the deal with Jeff Jarrett apparently was never finalized. So they don't own the name. And it's going to be curious to see what their branding is going forward. I think it's a horrible idea to rebrand yet again. But if that's what you have to do to firmly entrench yourself, you know, just go as Impact Wrestling from now on. No letters necessary. We all know it's a wrestling company. We don't really need letters. Just go with Impact Wrestling. But they got to get something that is more firm and more solidified so they can build that brand over time. Something they've done a horrible job of. John Cena's dad is in the news this week. He has a real issue with Jinder Mahal being world champion. He doesn't think that Jinder Mahal has done what he needs to do to be a legitimate world champion. And it's interesting coming from John Cena's father, considering a lot of people think that John Cena has only been the 16-time world champion because he's the golden child that Vince McMahon chose, not because his physical prowess or his in-ring ability has dictated so. So it's curious to me to see why John Cena's dad thinks that John Cena is any more qualified to be world champion than Jinder Mahal. I have no problem with Mahal being champion. I've said that before. I actually like Jinder Mahal as champion. And John Cena's dad needs to take a step back and realize what's really going on in the pro wrestling world. Jinder Mahal makes a good heel. I just wish he'd win more on a clean fashion. But John Cena's dad needs to stay doing whatever he's doing and stay away from WWE Championship material, because obviously he doesn't understand, unless he's trying to build this towards a Cena-Mahal feud, which we already expect in January. With all that being said, I do want to address the two big topics this week. One, I will begin with Otto Wanz. For those who don't know who Otto Wanz is, he passed away this past week. Otto Wanz wrestled more famously in the United States for the American Wrestling Association, the AWA, with Vern Gagne, and at one point actually defeated Vern Gagne when he was virtually untouchable for the AWA World Heavyweight Championship. He held that title for 41 days, and that's not the extent of his impact in the world of professional wrestling. What a lot of American fans don't realize is Otto Wanz was huge in Japan and in Europe, and he actually founded the Catch Wrestling Association, the CWA. Now, that may not seem like a big deal to WWE fans, but what we need to understand is his CWA is almost like the birthplace of European wrestling in the German marketplace, in some of the other towns around the area. And what ended up happening is he started to attract talents that you may not be as overly familiar with, but one I know you would be. At one point, he was the CWA, the Catch Wrestling Association, World Heavyweight Champion, and he lost the title to a young, hungry challenger named Bull Power. Bull Power has got his start in the AWA as well. He was Leon White. He eventually would go on to become Big Van Vader, and more popularly known as just Vader to WWE fans and WCW fans. He held multiple WCW World Championships, and he was extremely successful, United States Champion, etc. At one point, Vader held so many championships. I want to say he had championships on like four or five different continents because he was so over internationally. And he got his real push, his real drive as a champion, partially in the CWA and under the tutelage of Otto Wanz. And so I think when people think about Otto Wanz, he's a name that you don't hear brought up often as being one of the legends of the business. But the reality is this. When you walk into a ring and you beat Vern Gagne at his heyday, for those who don't know a lot about AWA programming, it would be akin to beating Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania in 1987. It just shouldn't happen. And he did. And not only did he win the championship, back in those days, it would be very common for a champion to lose a title on a Monday and win it back on a Tuesday. Lose it on a Wednesday, win it back on Thursday. And that didn't happen. He held the championship for 41 days. And he did a great job in that short span. And you know what? His influence on the professional wrestling world may not be as well known, but you know, to the casual fan, but to those of us who are smart marks, diehard fans, Otto Wanz' legacy, his contributions to the professional wrestling industry cannot be overstated. So to the Otto Wanz family, we send our condolences on his passing, and hopefully, based on his passing, hopefully people start to look up what his contributions really were. There's some really amazing matches online. Look them up. Go to YouTube. Go to Daily Motion or wherever you go to check out your videos and see what there is about Otto Wanz, because it's really a pleasure. I'm going to move on to the hardest part of this episode. This show tonight, one of our live episodes, is dedicated to the memory of a man who really revolutionized the sport in more ways than a lot of people will ever understand. I was asked why I didn't come out first thing on Monday and do an episode. I took a couple days to sit back and really reflect a little bit on Bobby the Brain Heenan. Because as a child, when you watch WWE programming, you would see this guy and he was always with the bad guys. And you hated the bad guys. You were a Hulk Hogan fan or you were an Ultimate Warrior fan. And you wanted to see Bobby Heenan's guys lose. But as a child, I didn't understand how incredibly important Bobby Heenan really was. For the people who don't know a lot about Bobby Heenan, you need to understand that this guy came from a seventh grade education, leaving school very early, and he started carrying bags and transporting materials for professional wrestlers when they would go do shows in his area. He eventually would go on to become a mouthpiece and a fixture in wrestling, managing people early on like Angelo Poffo, the father of the Macho Man Randy Savage and Leaping Lanny Poffo. He would go on to wrestle or to manage other talents when he made his debut with the AWA, like Harley Race, like Nick Bockwinkel. And it really, you know, people seem to realize all this WWE contributions, but people really don't realize, like, he was a part of the business from the time of being like 15 years old on, and he made a huge impact long before WWE. I'll never forget when you watch matches like Nick Bockwinkel wrestling Hulk Hogan for the AWA World Heavyweight Championship. Bobby Heenan's at ringside. He's the manager. He's got the Heenan family. It was talked about that Dick the Bruiser was the one who started calling him the Weasel. And it caught on so well. Fans in arenas around the country all throughout the rest of his career, even at Comic-Con, WrestleCon shows and signings, still called him the Weasel. And he loved it affectionately. It led to him having a couple Weasel matches, wearing a Weasel suit when he would lose to the likes of Vern Gagne, Greg Gagne, the Ultimate Warrior. And when you look at Bobby Heenan's career, I hope that over the last week, as the news broke on Monday and up and through today, I hope people actually took the time to look back at his career prior to WWE. Now, his career in WWE is legendary in and of itself. And the reason I started this dialogue this way is so that people understand that long before WWE, he was already a Hall of Fame manager. WWE did something different for Bobby Heenan. Yes, when he got there, he was given a stable of wrestlers that were just amazing. Some people forget that Ken Patera was one of his first talents, along with Big John Studd. They're the tag team that took Andre the Giant down when he had the really long, shaggy hair and they shaved his head. They're the ones who jumped him and the British Bulldog and Superfly Jimmy Snuka. When Ken Patera left due to some circumstances, that's when they brought in King Kong Bundy. They brought in other wrestlers over the time, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, the Brainbusters, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, Haku and Tama, the Islanders, Harley Race, once again coming in as King Harley Race, Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. You could even say in a way, even though he called himself a broadcast journalist, that Bobby Heenan was essentially the manager of Ric Flair when he came to WWE. He's the one who was issuing the challenges as the real world champion. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is not just in front of the camera, not just standing at ringside shouting instructions to his wrestlers, but in the back and in the psychology of wrestling, Bobby Heenan contributed on a level very much unmatched by almost anyone. Bobby Heenan understood the psychology of the match. I'll never forget, for those who have had the privilege of watching the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD that is very hard to find now since he reconciled with WWE before his passing, that Bobby Heenan had a conversation there about the Warrior where he talked about the Warrior not knowing how to set up a spot and do this and do that and slow down. And he would talk about the spots that Andre liked to pull off in his matches. And when you heard him speaking, I know the DVD was about the Warrior, but you could just hear that Bobby Heenan understood wrestling psychology in a way that nobody else really got it at that point in time. He ended up going on to manage people like the Narcissist, Lex Luger. And so, he even had a moment where he managed Abe Knuckleball Schwartz and the Brooklyn Brawler. So, Bobby Heenan contributed managerially on so many different levels for so many different talents. For a long time, he could not get a championship into his stable to save his life. In the AWA, he was very fortunate. He had the world champion. He had the world tag team champions. But in WWE, he really didn't get that success until a little bit later. He started getting some success when Ravishing Rick Rude defeated the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 5 when he held the Warrior's leg down from outside the ring so Rude could pick up the win. Shortly after that, the Brainbusters, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, won the WWE World Tag Team Championship. So he started to see gold. He led Mr. Perfect to his first Intercontinental Championship. His career is legendary as a manager, but that, in a lot of ways, pales in comparison to his influence as an announcer. Keep in mind that Bobby the Brain Heenan wrestled and worked for and managed in the AWA, the WWE, and in WCW, in the XWF, and in countless other minor promotions around the world throughout his time. And when it came to his career in WWE, at one point they asked him to fill in on commentary because Jesse Ventura was out. And it just worked. Bobby Heenan would forge an on-screen and behind-the-counter relationship with Gorilla Monsoon. And they would become great lifetime friends. They would share great memories. Their banter on television was just completely comical. It was poetry in motion every time they got to work together. You could hear things coming. Bobby Heenan's catchphrases, these ham and eggers, these humanoids out here. And at the same time, you could hear Gorilla Monsoon arguing with him. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. And just the arguing back and forth. It was all the fodder of legends. They brought it every time they had a show together. You could just feel their chemistry. It was like a brotherhood, despite the fact that one of them was supposed to be a heel and one was supposed to be a babyface. Bobby Heenan eventually would move on to WCW, and to close out his career in WWE, they had an episode where Gorilla Monsoon throws him out of a WWE Raw taping, and he spends the rest of the night trying to get back into the building, and it doesn't work. What people may not realize is after that show aired, everyone knew that he was leaving. He gave his notice. And he and Gorilla Monsoon had been sharing a hotel room. And they spent hours afterwards crying their eyes out because it was so emotional for Bobby Heenan to leave the WWE. He was going to go on hiatus to try to calm his nerves a bit. He had some lingering neck issues from when he broke his neck. And it ended up that shortly after he left, he got lured back to wrestling by WCW, where he would go on to, you know, co-host with people like Tony Schiavone and Mike Tenay, and he was always entertaining. Larry Zbysko and Dusty Rhodes. There was just always these people who it seemed like their commentary skill increased just by being on the broadcast mic with Bobby Heenan. I'll never forget one of the shows early in the year, I want to say somewhere in like February or March, the one year, where Brian Pillman ended up grabbing a hold of Bobby Heenan, scaring the daylights out of him, and it was a total shoot. Bobby Heenan dropping the F-bomb on live television and everything because he freaked out when Brian Pillman got physical with him. I was concerned that I thought they were going to get rid of him. But I could hear it. It was on broadcast television. I could hear it. And they kept him. And then, you know, a little while later, you started to see when they started evolving the Thunder brand in WCW, he would go to that show. He always contributing at a high level. When Gorilla Monsoon passed away, he gave a very emotional conversation to the Nitro viewers. You could see the emotion on his face. You could see that he really was in a bad way. And then later on in his career, when he took a step away from the ring, unfortunately, he got throat cancer. A man who was known for being a spokesman and a person on the microphone, he got throat cancer. His trademark sound and tone of his voice, it was gone. And eventually he had to have multiple surgeries and have parts of his jaw removed. So much so that the iconic scene, the figure of Bobby Heenan standing at ringside was gone. In a lot of ways, he had a very different appearance. It was tough for some diehard wrestling fans to come to terms with, because that's when you realize that this guy wasn't just a bad guy manager. He wasn't just a commentator. He was a hero. Wrestling fans around the world, they loved Bobby Heenan. I listened to a lot of people on Twitter the other day and on Facebook, and I had a few messages at the Sound Offline talking about how much they miss Bobby Heenan. That nobody commentates like Bobby Heenan. Nobody contributes like Bobby Heenan. He was so original. He was so organic. And really, in a lot of ways, despite the fact that his character is supposed to be from Beverly Hills, California, he was ridiculously down to earth. There's nothing but great stories from fans from all over the world who got to meet him at whatever convention, whatever signing event, whatever charity work he did. And I hope those people really get to enjoy and reflect on those experiences and realize how precious those memories are. This past week, we lost Bobby the Brain Heenan. It was a very emotional moment for me as a huge wrestling fan, as a person who idolized him in my young adulthood. And I wish nothing but the most sincere condolences to his family. And hopefully, people will reflect and remember Bobby Heenan for all his positive contributions to the wrestling industry. On our website at frowrestling.com, we have a little bit there about Bobby Heenan. We said, here at the Fro Wrestling Podcast, are saddened to hear the passing of Bobby the Brain Heenan, a man who exemplified what it is to be a sports entertainer and who transcended the sport with his quick wit and knack for bringing about the best in other talents. We want to send our condolences to the Heenan family, and perhaps now the Brain can take his place above all the rest next to his fellow broadcast partner, Gorilla Monsoon. That is all the time we have for this episode. Check back with us next episode. We will run down all the news and rumors in the world of professional wrestling. Special thanks, as always, go out to bensound.com and purpleplanet.com for producing all the music and sound effects we use in today's show. Today's podcast was sponsored in part by Beazel Games. Bringing a new friend to family game night is easy with sketchy people. Showcase your artistic side in this new game from Beazel Games by going to thefrowrestling.com and clicking the icon in the middle of the screen. And to AlleyRepair.com, contact Alley Repair today for servicing of all your classic skee-ball, pinball, and arcade game needs. Be sure to shoot over to our website at frolifeplanning.com and contact us today if you have issues with trying to get into a college, a university, higher education, or you just need additional training to pursue a new career path. That's what we like to help you with here at the Fro Wrestling Podcast and at Fro Life Planning. Check us out at frolifeplanning.com, because remember, Fro Life Educational Planning is for today, for tomorrow, and for life with Fro Life. I'm Fred Froelich, better known as Mr. Fro. I want to thank you for taking a few moments with us today. And if you're looking for more wrestling news and rumors, go to thesportsjunkies101.com. That's T-H-A, thesportsjunkies101.com, for the latest articles on the world of professional wrestling. Until next time, everybody, take care and have a great night.